Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thanks so much for being with us today as we go back to 2008. That was the top of the charts for the first few months of 2008, right around the time this happened.
And the bell has sounded, bringing to a close an extraordinary day on Wall Street. Bear Stearns today leading the tumble on Wall Street. The stock plunging 45% after the New York Federal Reserve and J.P. Morgan agreed to provide an emergency financing to the Wall Street firm.
Beginning of the financial crisis, you're listening to it there, the failure of Bear Stearns happened exactly 10 years ago this week, in March of 2008. A collapse of the housing market and a near collapse of the financial system followed, and then after that, a deep recession, all brought about by speculation and risky investments on Wall Street. Now, 10 years later, the Senate is voting this very week, potentially to roll back banking rules known as Dodd-Frank, put in place after that financial crisis. The bill's supporters say it's all aimed at small community banks who've had trouble coping with the new rules. But is that all it does? Paul Mirsky is Executive Vice President of Congressional Relations and Strategy for the Independent Community Bankers of America. They represent about 5,700 community banks nationwide, and Paul is their lobbyist in front of Congress. Paul, welcome.
Glad to be with you.
Well, Paul, the community banks that you represent have argued for a long time that they kind of got swept up in the regulation of banking and mortgages after the 2008 crisis. What are the main changes in this bill that small banks like yours are trying to get?
Well, we're very glad to see that Congress on a bipartisan basis is looking at doing major relief for community banks. The vast majority of banks in this country are community banks, about 5,700 of them nationwide. And they're very important because despite their small size as part of the total assets of the banking sector, community banks do about 50% of all small business loans and 80% of all agriculture loans. So this reg relief is bipartisan, and it's really looking to reform some regulations so banks can serve their customers better by doing mortgages, small business loans, being able to attract the capital that they need to extend more credit in their communities.
Well, Dodd-Frank basically said that banks have to hold cash reserves now as a way to protect against bankruptcies or financial insolvency, the kind of crisis that we saw in 2008. How have those rules, those capital requirements, in your view, made it harder for small banks to do business in towns around America?
Sure. Well, banks should hold a solid level of capital, and it's important that regulators make sure banks do have adequate capital levels. But what's happened is that the capital rules that were put in place to address the largest international systemically risky Wall Street banks were applied across the board to all banks. And those capital rules are highly complex, very costly to deal with. So you could have high capital levels, but not have the complexity of how you calculate those high capital levels. And that's what this reform does. It really addresses the complex capital rules and risk weights and complexities of calculating your capital and tells banks if you have a solid capital level, 8 to 10%, that you don't have to go through all the complex rules. You already have enough capital.
Well, Paul, look, you understand banking and you also understand Congress. This bill has some relief for your banks, but they're not the only ones. Some of the big banks, the giant ones, are getting in on this bill too. Why are big banks like Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, why do they have provisions in this bill? And would you rather see them not included?
Well, there's virtually nothing in here for the very largest banks. You have to make a distinction between banks that are $50 million and banks that are over $2 trillion. So the top 5 or 10 banks in the country that control more than half of the banking assets, there's virtually nothing in this bill for them. It's targeted with dozens of provisions for community banks, and that's what the focus is, and that's why the bill has really attracted generous bipartisan support. One-third of the Democratic members of the United States Senate have voted to advance this bill. So there's provisions in there for banks of all sizes, but the vast majority of provisions are focused directly on community banks, which really need the help. The important thing here is that you don't want a banking system where there's only a few, handful of mega banks. You want a system where there's competition in banking and banks of all sizes.
Well, Paul Mirsky represents the Independent Community Bankers of America as a lobbyist in front of Congress. Paul, thank you so much.
Well, enjoyed being with you. Thank you.
Well, if smaller banks around the country like the regulatory relief they'll get from this bill in front of the Senate this week, big banks are not left out. The Senate voted to advance that bill on Monday evening. 17 Democrats voted for it, but some Democrats say this isn't just about the small banks. Here's Massachusetts Democrat Elizabeth Warren.
It is the same mindset that set the stage for the savings and loan crisis in the late 1980s and the financial crisis of 2008. America's working families will pay the price if we make the same mistakes again. It isn't too late. We should stop this bill from becoming law.
For more on exactly what's in the bill that Elizabeth Warren derisively calls the Bank Lobbying Act, we go to Emily Flitter, banking reporter for the New York Times. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Todd.
Well, we just heard from a lobbyist for the community banks there. What Dodd-Frank rules exactly are these proposals in the Senate aiming to undo?
The biggest thing that they are trying to change is the size of the banks that have to adhere to the strictest regulations that were imposed by Dodd-Frank. So banks that are $50 billion or bigger in assets now have to submit themselves to really intense stress tests that are conducted by the Fed. And they also have to do things like plan for their own failure. It's hard for the smallest banks in the country to adhere to these rules. There's a lot of paperwork. The stress tests take a lot of time, and it's basically, you know, regulators going through their books with a fine-tooth comb. So this bill would just raise the size of the banks that have to submit to that from $50 billion to $250 billion. So the smaller banks would get a bit of a break.
Well, have community banks really had a hard time with Dodd-Frank rules? I mean, their argument is they got caught up in this crackdown on the big banks after the financial crisis, and they weren't to blame for all of the risky loans and credit default swaps, and that the new requirements are hurting them and their ability to do business. Is that true? Is that what's going on in the real world?
Even people who support really strict regulation on banks agree that Dodd-Frank, it's not that it went too far in principle. It's just that the smallest banks do need a little bit of relief. They did get caught up in a new system that was supposed to protect the overall financial system from failures by the biggest banks.
Well, you've reported, though, that if this bill is intended to give some relief to the smallest banks out there, that some of the big banks, the big ones, Citigroup and huge banks like that, are trying to nose in and get in on this action here, that they want some of these exemptions, too. What's happening?
That's right. There's a part of the bill that has nothing to do with small banks. It gives relief to bigger banks that do a really specific thing. There are banks out there, and some of them do this as their main business. They take deposits from other banks and then immediately park them at central banks. For instance, State Street. You're not going to walk in off the street as a, you know, a radio host and get a bank account at State Street, because that's not what State Street does. It gives Goldman Sachs, for instance, a bank account, and it then takes the money that it gets from this other institution and puts it right into the Fed, which State Street and its peers, Bank of New York Mellon, for instance, say, look, why should we have to adhere to a capital requirement that treats these receipts of cash by us, which we immediately give to a central bank, as something that's risky that we have to hold capital against? Well, right now they have to do that, but a part of this bill says they would be exempted from a capital requirement for that type of activity. The biggest banks like Citigroup and JP Morgan, they want that exemption too, because they do a little bit of that business, but you know, it's not their main business. So as an issue on the whole, this has nothing to do with small banks, but it's the wedge that the big banks are using to go further into, you know, exploring a rollback of more of Dodd-Frank.
Now, you have these capital requirements, basically cash that banks have to keep on hand as a safety valve against another crisis, so that they have cash on hand and they can't go completely unliquid like they did last time, many of them. But Republicans, you know, backing a loosening of Dodd-Frank rules isn't really a surprise in the U.S. Congress. But we have a situation now where more than a dozen Senate Democrats voted to advance the bill to loosen these rules, many of them up for re-election, some of them not. What explains Democrats getting behind this?
I think that Democrats who support this bill agree that the small banks need relief. And the strange and fascinating thing about this bill is that there has been a bipartisan deal that everybody involved in it says is a grand, rare agreement. And because they've sort of made the agreement and are now looking at it like it's this rare and wondrous thing in our dark times in Washington, where it's very hard to get anybody to agree on anything, they really don't want to break it. That means that a couple of little things that might not be about relief for small banks have sort of snuck in, and nobody wants to rock the boat by, you know, if you're a Democrat, just throwing down and saying, I'm sorry, but this is a deal breaker. That is one of the reasons why these couple of tweaks in the bill have survived as they have.
But talk about rocking the boat. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, the Democrats' chief progressive spokesperson against the power of the big banks, is rocking the boat hard. We heard from her at the top. I mean, isn't this just part of the ongoing sort of fight for the soul of the Democratic Party? I mean, the progressives are railing against this bill as a giveaway to the big banks. More establishment Democrats, I guess you could call them, voting for it. This sounds like a problem that's still kind of festering in the heart of the Democratic Party.
It's true. There's a divide between people who want to, I don't want to just say compromise, but also who want to sort of accept something less than ideal, and other progressives who are saying, no, this is wrong and we're going to take a stand, you know, and we can't have even something that everyone may agree is necessary, like a fix for the smallest banks, until we protect against the encroachment that the biggest banks are trying to carry out here.
Emily Flitter, covering banking for the New York Times. Thanks so much, Emily.
Thank you, Todd.